Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. As everybody who's been listening to me knows that I have concentrated on the student loan debt crisis. But we have a crisis that immediately, really severe. And Steve and I are going to talk about the coronavirus and the defense budget, and how the government is pouring money into the defense budget when there's greater need dealing with the coronavirus. So, Steve, what's your take?
Okay, well, you know, it's really hard to find. You have to go looking for it. But I would say that if there's one silver lining anywhere in this current crisis, is that it is bringing into focus the spending priorities, the public spending priorities that we have, the order that we place them in here in this country, and what that ends up doing, what that has done to make this current situation happen and have the severity that it's happening, and our inadequate preparation, and as a result of inadequate preparation, our inability to properly cope and work our way through with this now that it's happened. And I'll just, kind of give you, let's start out with the shortest possible version, which is that one B-2 bomber. For those who don't know what the B-2 bomber is, it is that long, big, bat-shaped bomber that was designed in 1989 specifically to be undetectable on radar. Its mission, and it had only one mission, even when it was designed, only one thing it was designed to do, which was to be able to get deep across Soviet borders into, factory locations and other places and missile silos where we might theoretically drop nuclear bombs in order to mitigate an existential threat if a nuclear World War III broke out as instigated by the Soviet Union, because that was kind of what some people back then were seeing as a gap in our ability to respond to such a thing, because we had missiles and we had other kinds of bombers, but if they were detectable on radar, they might not be able to deliver their payload. So this is a single function bomber. And of course, by 1992, there was no Soviet Union. The thing had started to go into production, but by the mid to late 1990s, the Air Force was petitioning Congress to stop making it. They didn't want it anymore. It didn't have a mission. And as a bomber, for any other purpose besides its specific design, it was an unbelievably expensive and inefficient way to deliver, to deliver bombs. And so they were seeking to cancel it. And what ended up happening is that Congress, led by, unfortunately, the man people consider a progressive, he's deceased now, but back then, Maurice Hinchey, of here in the Hudson Valley, was 22nd congressional district back then, having Raytheon in his district, wrote a dear colleague letter. That's a thing that happens in Congress when congressmen are seeking some log rolling from their fellow members. Vote for this thing I want, and later I'll vote for something you want for your district. He wrote a dear colleague letter to save the B-2 bomber, and since then we've produced 22 of them. And they cost $2.2 billion apiece. They've only been used to bomb Kosovo, Iraq, Afghanistan. They've, places that don't even have air defense systems, which is what the Air Force was saying back in the 1990s. And so they've been used sporadically, basically as show planes, for stuff like that, because they're there, because the Air Force was forced to accept them. So sometimes they use them. They cost $2.2 billion apiece. And right now we're seeing that, we're trying to purchase 80,000 ventilators and they're costing about $1 billion, $12,500 apiece, $1 billion federal government about to try to purchase them, too late, too little, too late. And they are all together the price of one half of one B-2 bomber, which the Air Force itself didn't want. Congress, gave to them anyway, And if we only had 21 of those bombers instead of 22, we could have acquired 160,000 ventilators as a stockpile to prevent this, from happening when it happened. And, you know, military people who favor military preparedness of all people are the ones who understand most clearly that you are purchasing slack, right? On a good day, there's no war. You don't need this stuff, but you're purchasing it in case. I'm in a fire department. We purchase stuff. We don't use it every day. We don't have a house fire here in my district every day, but we purchase enough stuff so that if there is a house fire, we'll be able to put it out, because house fires do sometimes happen. That's the whole point of having a fire department. And so it's the same kind of thing, right? And so you end up looking at a question from a military preparedness point of view. You've got 22 copies, 20, maybe 20 surviving in use, 20 copies of a $2.2 billion plane that doesn't even serve a preparedness function, by the testimony of our own Air Force experts, that we make and maintain. And it's not just the price of each plane. These things are so specialized that they have to be stashed when they're not in the air in special climate-controlled hangars, because their instrumentation is so delicate to things like temperature and moisture that they have to be maintained in special climate-controlled hangars the entire time from the 1990s to the present that we've been keeping them, in operation and manufacturing more of them. Whereas preparing for a pandemic, right, is certainly in the same category of protection of American life that, most conservatives identify as, the only non-negotiable function of government, right, that would protecting human life, protecting American life, and yet we repeatedly make choices to prepare for things that that are not even considered threats by the people we pay to be the experts on what might be threats, and we don't spend the money to prepare for things that we know are threats, right? It's not like SARS didn't happen. It's not like H1N1 didn't happen. Those things happened. And we were lucky that they happened in only the most limited way, here in the United States. But certainly, the preponderance of evidence is that things like this could happen, and we need to have a response. And instead of having a response like we do to, military conversations about, what's the best way to prepare for when something goes wrong, and yes, it requires expenditures, but that's the whole point, right? That's the whole point of having programs that are designed at the protection of American life. And rather than, look at the question comprehensively from all threats to life, we keep pouring $1.4 trillion a year into the military. I'm going to restate the basic numbers again, because there's no way to overstate them, because it's still not registering with the American people, the reality of it. We have 800 military bases in 130 different countries right now, and no other country in the world even has one base in any country except their own. We have a military budget that's bigger than the next 12 countries combined, and 10 of those 12 countries have formal mutual defense treaties with the United States. So we have to really get our heads around what our leaders are doing. Of course, these decisions are being made by both parties equally. It's not like you can look at the politicians of either major party and say that you even get a lesser evil out of this. Like I said, the congressman in my district, Maurice Hinchey, was known as one of the great progressives on social justice, one of the great progressives on the environment. He's the one who saved this bomber at $2.2 billion apiece when the Air Force didn't want it. So you don't get a lesser evil on this question. You get equal partnership from all involved to blow all of our vast surpluses that we produce in this country every year on wasted, I'm not going to say, let's dismantle the entire military. But when we know factually that we could have bought 170,000 ventilators for the price of one B-2 bomber, and had 19 bombers instead of 20 for a plane that the Air Force didn't even want, you know, then I have to sense that the only reason we stand around here tolerating this is because it's just not talked about. We don't know it. You know, find me a person, walk up to a person on the street and say, how many B-2 bombers do we have? They won't know. They probably won't even know which plane it is. And if they do know which plane it is, ask them how much one of them costs. They won't know because it's not on TV. You know, it's not on Facebook. It's not in campaign speeches. When a Democrat is running against a Republican, go around saying, if you elect me, I will cancel the B-2 once and for all and put that money into ventilators. Even now, while this is happening, you know, Joe Biden will not say, I'm going to cancel the B-2 and buy, you know, a huge quantity of ventilators. So you don't get a lesser evil on this. You don't get a solution. We're never going to solve the health risks that leave millions of us, as we're now seeing, millions of us at threat of disability and death and the collapse of our entire economy. Because in a contagion, right, we can't be around each other. We can't go to our traditional places of employment. We can't manufacture things. You know, we can't go to stores to buy things. And that's where everybody works, right? So then nobody's working. Nobody's eating. Nobody's going to college. You know, and this is the state that we're in because our leadership on both sides of the aisle is equally devoted to the B-2 bomber instead of to what we need to protect our lives and safety and our economy here at home. So there you have it. There it is in a nutshell. There's the problem. You know, you don't even have to bring anything else into it. Just one B-2 bomber. But it's a conversation we're still not having, even right now, in the midst of this crisis.
Now, you and I have talked numerous times off the air and on the podcast about the student loan debt crisis and how it's detrimental to the economy. Does that pale in comparison to what's going on today?
You know, no, because it's all part and parcel of the same thing. You know, if we were operating a defensive military instead of a global occupying military, then all of our college could be free. You know, we wouldn't have to have this discussion in any way whatsoever. And as a product of having, and we'd also be able to get all of our health care for free. And as a product of both of those things working together, we'd have our best scientists going to graduate school to learn how to research medical crises and cure diseases and do miraculous surgeries with, you know, with lasers and microscopes and all these great things that they could be doing if they weren't getting higher pay to go design missile guidance systems. Currently budgeted at $11 trillion for a revamping of our nuclear missile system. And nobody even knows why we have a nuclear missile system right now when, you know, the Soviet Union's been gone since 1992 and there's no threat of that kind of existential nature that couldn't be handled by lesser systems that don't cost $11 trillion, you know, and don't involve blowing up radioactive nuclear weapons that would, you know, destroy most human life on the face of the planet and mutate whatever portion survives because of the effect of the radiation on our genetics. And you know, we're doing that. That was started by Barack Obama late in his second term. That wasn't started by Donald Trump. Donald Trump only continued it. And the shocking thing is that when Donald Trump decided to continue that, and announced that he wanted credit for supporting and financing the redevelopment of our nuclear missile system, the Democrats jumped right up and like, you know, scolded him for taking credit for something that Barack Obama did instead of saying, oh, my God, why did Barack Obama do this when nobody can afford to go to college? You know, it's all tied together. It's all tied together. And by the way, as long as I'm before, you know, we go back, I'm aware that it probably sounds like I'm breathing hard. I just want anyone who's listening to know that I'm healthy and I'm fine. The reason I'm breathing hard is because I'm outdoors walking my dog, walking up and down hills as we speak. So if anyone's worried or concerned that it sounds like I'm out of breath, I'm not. I'm just enjoying this beautiful morning.
So it seems like Glenn's going to be the likely nominee, okay? And then we have Trump. And neither one of them are addressing this problem.
Right.
Do both of them actually know what the problem is?
Yes, of course they do. People are questioning Biden right now. Are you interested in changing anything about your platform now that this formerly speculative issue that we clearly did not prepare for well has come to pass and is our daily reality? Is there anything about your platform that you would like to adjust? And he keeps saying no. He's done like 5 interviews this week where he just flat out answers that question with a no. And so, it takes you back to the, something I've said many times before, which is that despite our general distrust of politicians because of their tendency to lie, there are some areas in which we should believe them. When Hillary Clinton said that she was inclined to invade Syria, we were able to believe that because she voted yes on every single war, every single one, and they were all non-defensive. And so that was something we could believe. When Joe Biden, who first joined the Senate in 1973 and has never ceased to vote in favor of all of this stuff, and keeps it as the hallmark of his career, and you ask him, well, now that this thing has come to pass, will you change anything about your platform in order to protect us from it in the future? And he says, no, I won't. You have to believe him. Those are because he's been doing that since 1973. If he suddenly said, yeah, I will change, that might be something that you want to contemplate whether you would believe, right? Because he's been doing the opposite of that since 1973. And if you wanted to be an optimist, you could look at that and say, well, things have suddenly changed very dramatically, and he's registering that. And so he's saying, I'll do something that will address this. But when he says to you in response to that question, no, I'm not going to change anything. I'm going to keep on being who I've been since 1973. You can absolutely 100% ironclad believe that. He's telling you the truth. You elect him, he's not changing a thing. So, then the question comes to what is the role we play in here? Because we're the voters. And one way of looking at it is that we've been convinced.
Steve, let me stop you for one second.
Sure.
I think there's a something else that we should discuss, and that's the role of Congress. Congress has the power of the purse. So are all or most of the Congress people aware that we should not be pouring money into the military, but for human interest, stuff like ventilators? Are they aware of that?
Yes, they're all aware of it. They're all aware of it, and there are maybe like 4 or 5 of them that care, that actually care. And things change a little bit when you are in Congress, when you're in the House or Senate, as opposed to when you're the president. When you are in the House or the Senate, you actually become subject to the very tragic reality that in the post-World War II period, when the Cold War led to the creation of the military-industrial complex, the contractors put factories in every single one of our 435 congressional districts. They did
right.
That for a very smart reason, which is that they wanted to create a situation not where products could be made efficiently, which obviously that's the opposite of that. The efficient manufacturing of products would argue in favor of the factories being close to each other, right? I mean, that's pretty obvious. But what they were aiming for there was creating a situation where nothing could ever be canceled. And the reason that nothing can ever be canceled is that when you have a Raytheon factory, the Raytheon factory is paying gigantic property taxes on its very valuable factory property to Binghamton. If you cancel the B-2 bomber, let's get back to Maurice Hinchey. If you cancel the B-2 bomber, what happens to the school district for the city of Binghamton? They have to fire like half their teachers. That one factory is such a major factor in their local tax structure, in their local public services revenue stream. Who's paying for the cops? Who's paying for the firefighters? You know, everybody ends up tethered, you know, bound and enslaved to this revenue flow, which they built in all 435 districts. And so if you're the congressman and something is being proposed that will literally turn Binghamton into Flint, Michigan overnight, and you don't fight to prevent that, then you're being a crappy representative to your district, right? I mean, like, that's, let's you know, make sure that everybody understands why this happens in the first place. It's not an invisible thing. It's not just the few hundred people in the factory that are going to lose their jobs relative to the 750,000 people that live in the entire district. That's pretty small potatoes. The big potatoes is the part about, with Raytheon closed and not paying any property taxes anymore, all the jurisdictions that were receiving its property taxes go belly up. No firefighters, no teachers, no snow plowing. You know, where do you get the money? Jack up residential property taxes to $18,000 a year? What do you do to your retired people, people who can't pay that? You know, like, you know, just start confiscating people's properties when they can't pay their property tax bill, have the sheriff come kick everyone out of their house. So it's not like the motive is pure callousness. You know, the military industrial complex, the investors in it, you know, they're not stupid. They know that their revenue stream is dependent on the continuation of public policy, right? It's not like they're selling a consumer product. And if we all like it and they advertise it well, they'll all be rich, like, you know, Henry Ford building a car. When you make tanks and you make fighter jets and you make, you know, guidance systems for long-range bombers, that's at the mercy of public opinion. Anytime we think we don't need it, we'll cancel it. And there goes your revenue stream, right? It's a mission-focused thing. And so they were very smart and broke up their operations. And, of course, the other effect of the operations being broken up into all 435 congressional districts is that even when we appropriate something that we do need, it's ridiculously expensive because, you know, its manufacturing system then has to involve shipping costs of things being packed up and shipped to their final assembly destination. You know, and it's just nuts. The whole system is nuts. And we wouldn't be able to drop it overnight. The only way we would be able to make it happen is to say, okay, Raytheon, we're not so much shutting you down, but we're converting you to production of mass transit equipment. You're not going to be making tanks anymore. You're going to be making buses and subway cars. So we're not putting you out of business, and we're not going to bankrupt Binghamton. You say you're all going in on the Green New Deal. We, all you guys that specialize in digital electronics, we're going to have you working on control systems for our new power generation grid and the various equipment that functions it so that it'll function, you know, efficiently. They don't care. They're not married to the idea of making stuff that sits idle or, in a worse scenario, blows things up. They're married to making money like any other business. So the way that you approach this is to say, I'm not going to close all the factories and fire all the advanced, you know, engineers that design this stuff. I'm just going to pay them to do something else. You know, we always have that option. What is a ventilator? It's a little electric motor with a digital computer system guiding how it detects your breathing and, you know, responds to what it's detecting about your breathing by providing you with more ventilation. And it monitors you and it sends a communication back to the nurse's desk in case they need to come running in, right? So this is just an electric motor and a computer control system, like anything else that these people are already making. And so the question is not about whether you're shutting everything down and bankrupting the city of Binghamton. The question is, what are you doing with the money? And so that's what brings us back to the original question, right? Which is that when we're dealing with something like preparing for medical emergencies, we're always offered the question, where are you going to get the money from? But when someone, the Air Force, wants to cancel the B-2 bomber, and some members of Congress want to prevent that from happening, nobody ever says to them, where are you going to get the money? You know, like it's the attitude about that. And we as the public play a dramatic role in that because we keep voting for these people. We don't exact a price from them. We don't even throw a primary. Forget about voting outside the Democratic or Republican parties. We don't even throw primary contestants against them. You know, when they do this, I will, you know, go back to, yeah, go ahead.
No, we have a couple of minutes left, so finish your thought.
In 2006, when I briefly changed to the Democratic Party, imagining I could be that primary opponent for someone who was voting for war and wasting our money and killing innocent people, I was in a room, it was in Syracuse, for a debate, and I asked the room, I said, everybody in this room who was vehemently against invading Iraq, raise your hand. And almost every hand in the room went up, right? And then I said, okay, how many of you at the last election, and I was talking about Schumer in this instance because he had been reelected and I was running against Hillary. I said, how many of you in the last Senate race voted for somebody who did it, who voted to do that? And, you know, there was, of course, a nervous twitter around the room, and all their hands very slowly went back up again because they understood what I was saying, you know, that they reelected him by a 70% margin and didn't even bring a primary opponent against him when all of them considered themselves to be people who had been vehemently against invading Iraq. And here we are all these years later. Schumer is the guy who is the head of the Democratic caucus in the Senate and calling all the shots for all the other Democrats, including which ones get to have campaign budgets when they run for reelection. So we also, yeah, you know, we can't conclude this discussion, and maybe we'll pick this part up next time, which is that, okay, what is the role we play as complicit voters? You know, we're not out of this equation. We're not helpless. You know, and we're not completely devoid of the information we need either, even though the media doesn't really do a lot to bring it. We're not devoid of it. So let's make that maybe the next discussion, is that what's our own role in this? What's our role?
Okay, so you are embarking on a political campaign. Tell everybody what you're doing.
I am running for Congress against Antonio Delgado, our first term member of Congress, who is, you know, who just voted to spend $2 billion on starting the Space Force. Antonio Delgado, there's another $2 billion. He voted to start preparing for invasion from outer space and put that under the command of Donald Trump at an initial price tag of $2 billion, when that same $2 billion could have bought 160,000 ventilators. So I'm running, you know, as a Green Party candidate against the Democrat. I'm doing my share in this. And so, you know, yes, I guess that's important for identification. Remind people that, of course, Mr. Delgado and whichever Republican ends up winning the primary in June for their party should feel free to be part of this conversation on your podcast. And I would even love to debate them on this, you know, directly.
Thank you. So, Steve, we'll talk next week. And this is a subject that really needs to be talked about. So you've been listening to Steve Greenfield, who is a Green Party candidate for Congress. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, All Exits Closed. Steve, have a great day. We'll talk next week.
Thank you. And everybody, try to spend some time outdoors. The sun is out.
Okay, have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.